Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
Hey, Greta here. Did you know Nerdette is officially 10 years old? I know, I can't believe it either. We are celebrating with a very special episode of the show coming up next Friday, and we would love to hear from you. Leave us a voicemail. You could sing happy birthday. You could tell us about your favorite episode. You could just tell us why you like Nerdette. We would love to hear from you. Record yourself on your phone and then email the file to nerdettepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks. From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend. Coming up, Jamie Loftus tells us about how she spent the summer of 2021 driving across the country eating 4 hot dogs a day.
And then I had a peanut butter and jelly hot dog once, and that was pretty unpleasant.
But first, it's our chance to sit back and unwind from the week that was with 2 excellent humans. With us this week is the co-host of the Crooked Media podcast, X-Ray Vision, and a writer on the new Freevee show, Primo, Jason Concepcion. Jason, hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Also here is scholar, community organizer, author, and all-around excellent nerd, Eve Ewing. Eve, hello.
Hi, I'm here with 2 of my faves.
Oh, yay. This is so much fun. Okay, so I want to start with Netflix this week. They are finally following through on their threats. They've started requiring users to all be on the same wireless network or else pay an extra $8 a month. This hit me this week because I've been using my mother's Netflix account for the last several years. She uses my Hulu. It seems like a fair trade. What about y'all? Have you been caught on this one this past week?
You know, this is cruel and unkind.
Great.
I feel like I can track my like socioeconomic growth over the years by my relationship to shared passwords. So I can say that I'm in a life phase where I am the giver of passwords. I'm not the receiver of passwords. Yeah, it's like a form of stability that, you know, many of us aspire to and I'm happy to have achieved. But the problem is that my husband and I are both like the givers of passwords in our families. And so when we moved in together, it was like, you know, at a certain point we got married and it was like, okay, are we going to have like 2 different accounts that each have like 7 people siphoning off of them? And so I decided that I was going to take an L. I did not take his name, but I did take his Netflix password. So I have moved myself on to be under, as the Bible says, you know, you grow old and you, a wife should merge the accounts. It's really another way of reinforcing Western nuclear household ideals that are very problematic. That's my hot take.
For sure. What do you think, Jason?
I too have been caught up in this. I too have become over the recent years the giver of passwords. I support my entire direct family with a Netflix password, and I've been trying to explain to them, my very frustrated family, particularly my mom, who mainlines Turkish historical dramas that that people even in Turkey have not seen. I've been trying to explain to her that because I'm a member of the WGA and on strike, it feels not the right time for me to up my contribution to Netflix's coffers in order to keep them on their Netflix passwords, and we've yet to come to a solution on that particular issue. It's only raised its head in the last few days, but it is a hot issue in this particular household.
Yeah, it's really tough. I think, too, I mean, at this point for me, it's like, yes, I certainly could afford my own Netflix account, but I don't want to give them dollars on principle at this juncture.
They're doing great. They're doing just fine.
Yeah. As someone who has developed a like remote parasocial relationship of fandom with Jason's mom, this is now, I feel really torn.
I know, right?
Who are we to deprive her of, you know, the Turkish drama content that she needs after she sacrificed so much to raise you? But on the other hand, I feel like there has to be some like principled theft seems like the only option. Like, I don't know if there's a VPN situation. I don't really know. There's got to be something.
We could try that. It is a little too tech heavy for her. I say that as in my dual role as her tech support.
Right, of course.
and it's, you know, it is a thorny thing. I've tried to tell her, like, listen, here's the deal. We're as a member of the WGA, we're currently not working because of various issues that we have, various serious issues regarding compensation and other things and the structure of the business. And at this point in time, us giving the enemy camp an extra $8 or even an extra several subscription fees, it just feels like the wrong time. You know, co-CEO Reed Hastings could make as much as $30+ million this year. They're good. And, you know, it just feels like the wrong time, Mom. She's not hearing it, unfortunately.
And it's also not just the money. It's also the subscriber count, right, which they use to as this kind of like techie, tech giant, infinite growth metric to, you know, forever be inflating. I mean, that's what this is about, right? It's a way of artificially inflating the number of subscribers, which they can use to then like promote this nonstop growth model. At a certain point, there is a cap on like the number of people on Earth who are realistically going to want to. And so the idea that for these companies, you know, that they have this model where infinite growth is the only metric of success, and we're supposed to just get behind that, and that writers don't see payoff from that in any way, right? That the incentive structure is such that kind of infinite growth does nothing, shamelessly does nothing to help writers pay their bills, is not cool, and it can't continue.
Mm-mm. So this week, the New York Times ran a guest essay from David Mack. He used to work for BuzzFeed. He wrote a viral tweet in 2020 that used the term hard pants, which definitely changed my vocabulary around pandemic attire. I think it's a really interesting time to reflect on the pandemic, because while so many things about the pandemic seem to have faded, it does seem like, as the headline of this piece suggests, soft pants are here to stay. Jason, are you wearing hard pants right now?
Oh, wow. Great question. I
am. On the spot. You are.
Because I've been on Zoom with camera on so much lately. I just kind of, when I'm going to get on a Zoom, I just instinctively put on quote unquote hard pants, i.e. pants that you would wear to go outside. I'm wearing jeans.
Interesting.
That said, had I known that we would be
cameras off, Zoom,
I'd be soft pants all the way. You know, there's very few positives I think that you could say came out of the lockdown era, but one of them is a dedication to a quality of life through our interaction with the fabrics that drape our body. And I'm one of those people who have really invested in numerous pieces of software, not just the pants, but like the matching crew neck sweatshirt is, I own several pairs of that. And, you know, I just like the flexibility of being able to be on my couch, then be outside and not look incongruous outside, and then be able to then go directly to sleep in the outfit that I've been wearing all day.
So what about you, Eve? What's your pants status at this moment?
Well, you know how when an article or a meme or something comes out and 10 different people send it to you and you become aware that something, you're like, oh, this is my brand.
Yeah,
right?
For me, it's with corgis. I get a lot of corgi stuff from people.
I get a lot of Fast and Furious content, and I got a lot of soft pants. Many people sent me this soft pants headline, which made me really proud, because I'm glad to be known as a soft pants advocate. And in particular, I think that the innovations in jogger technology are just great. So great. I have purchased like 6 pairs of one particular pant and like 5 pairs of another pant that are like they have a drawstring. They're kind of this like sort of polyester-y material that doesn't, like, I can wear it to work and it's not like, oh, Professor Ewing legit wore sweatpants to class. Like it's a step above that, but like just barely. And it goes with everything, you know. And then, I feel a way because that Jason is out here wearing hard pants at all, because
I know
this man is selling me sweatpants on podcasts every week.
It's very true.
And I so wear them. Personally convincing. He's so convincing, trying to tell me that all I need to do is wear these. I shall not say the brand because we're not being paid to do so. But Jason is out here selling sweatpants to the people, and now the truth comes out. So I the fact that you are for any portion of your day wearing hard pants is honestly a devastating blow for me.
It is.
But I'm gonna
personally unprofessional.
I'll get over
I think.
It. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we need like a Daily Beast like expose on the fact that Jason is like
hard pants
selling
question
a sweatpants
wearing
lifestyle.
Hard pants for it. Well, at least Jason, now you know on Nerdette we will never require hard pants. I just want to be really
okay,
clear
thank
about
you.
That
I,
on the record.
Sorry. Yeah, that was just an instinctive move. I want to.
No, I respect it.
I want to put something an evolution in the soft pant technology on people's radar. So recently I was having lunch with some friends, and one of them was wearing a jogger that is printed to look like jeans.
Oh yeah. Interesting. A hack, if you will.
And it's an incredible hack. Again, I won't mention the brand because we're not being paid to do so. Mm-mm. But they are so convincingly
jeans?
Aesthetically jeans, with the creases and the fading and the everything. And then when you touch them, they are sweatpants. It's incredible. And for those of us who you know, absolutely need a soft pant after the last several years, look for these. I was blown away.
Oh my God, that's so good.
That is very impressive. It's from the makers of the tuxedo t-shirt. The other thing is that immediately, I went to what is the ridiculous portmanteau that we can have, shorts that are jeans are jorts,
right.
Leggings that are jeans are jeggings, but unfortunately joggers that are jeans are joggers.
Yes.
So it doesn't quite work in the same way.
Oh, that's amazing.
Unless they wear doggers, which would be
I kind of like doggers, denim joggers.
Denim joggers. I'm glad you said that because I immediately forgot what the D was supposed to stand for. And I was like, why did I say that?
For you, Eve. It's all good.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so before I let y'all go, our next segment, as I mentioned, is with Jamie Loftus about her new book, Raw Dog, which is all about hot dogs.
So funny.
Jason, would you eat 4 hot dogs a day all summer?
Yeah, for sure. Easily. I was on vacation last summer, and my partner was like, where are you going with that one hot dog on a plate? I'm like, I'm going to the grill to make one hot dog because I desire right now in the morning.
This one hot dog.
I have one hot dog for breakfast. I love hot dogs. They're not good for me. The industry is frightening.
Yeah.
But I would easily eat 4 hot dogs a day if it was not a horrifying thing to do.
I hear you. I had a corn dog for the first time the other day in probably 10 years, and it was so good. It was lovely. What about you, Eve? Would you eat 4 hot dogs a day?
Yeah, I love hot dogs, man. I mean, the tricky thing for me is that I do mostly eat a Chicago-style hot dog, which has all the stuff on it. And so,
except ketchup.
Except ketchup. Yeah, so for those who are uninitiated, that includes relish, mustard, tomatoes, onions, hot peppers, a pickle,
celery salt,
and a steamed poppy seed bun. I think I said all the ingredients. Never ketchup, no ketchup.
I love ketchup on a hot dog, I gotta say. I'm gonna stand
by it. Yeah, I mean, you have so many other great qualities. I'm gonna move right past that. But, if you're putting all that stuff on a hot dog, it is four a day is rough.
That sounds really difficult.
Gotta say,
yeah.
The thing about a hot dog is, you know that beneath a certain floor, it's going to be good. You know what I mean? Above a certain floor, it's going to be good. And there's so many things in this crazy mixed up world. You just can't count on like that. You know what I mean? Nowadays, it's like there's so many. You can
beautiful.
Get a good plant-based hot dog. You can get some sort of ethical hot dog if that's your vibe.
Great point.
Turkey. We eat a lot of turkey hot dogs. You know, we have Muslim folks in my family, so we, the Vienna beef, there's so many great, honestly, it's a hot dog essence in our culture, and I think we all need to lean in to that.
That's so beautiful. Eve, Jason, thank you both so much for coming on. Jason, my condolences again about the hard pants.
I'm ashamed.
It's okay. Jason, you have to write an apology on your Notes app and then screenshot it.
I'm going to do that. I am going to do it. I promise you I will do it.
In just a minute, we are going to continue this glorious conversation all about hot dogs.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Our next guest is Jamie Loftus, whose podcasts include My Year in Mensa and ACCast and Ghost Church. She's also the co-host of the Bechdel cast. Plus, she's a comedian and a TV writer. She just wrote a book called Raw Dog, The Naked Truth About Hot Dogs. It's a travelogue with a slice of American history and a squirt of capitalist critique with a dollop of relish on top. Jamie, welcome to Nerdette.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I love the dollop.
Oh, good. I had a feeling you might. So you literally just wrote a whole ass book about hot dogs. You traveled across the United States. At times you were eating like 4 to 5 hot dogs a day.
Yeah.
Why did you do this?
A question that my therapist also asked me when I was like, I think I'm going to write a book. And she's like, great. I was like, it's going to be really physically painful. And she was like, why? Well, there's like the smart sounding answer and then the like self-punishing answer, where like it is true that there's much less written about hot dogs than you would think. There wasn't a book that existed that both talked about its cultural significance and talked about sort of the more difficult corners of the hot dog world, which goes into meat packing and goes into labor rights and all these things I'm really passionate about. And it's just, I don't know, everything has to do with hot dogs, like funny stuff, weird jingoistic stuff, horrible labor rights stuff. It's the hot dog is everything, is what I discovered. It's the fulcrum of the world. And I also just really enjoy a double dare style physical challenge. And so like traveling the country, eating too many hot dogs is very in step with the kind of physical punishment that I'm into.
So over the course of your journeys, what's the weirdest thing you think you saw on a hot dog?
Oh, weirdest thing I saw on a hot dog. Definitely SpaghettiOs. didn't love that. There are things that sound weird on a hot dog that when you actually in practice, it's pretty good. Like Seattle puts cream cheese and sriracha on their hot dogs. And when you think about it,
delicious.
Yeah, it's kind of just becomes like a breakfast sandwich. It's really good. And then I had a peanut butter and jelly hot dog once, and that was pretty unpleasant.
That doesn't sound very good.
Yeah, I appreciate that there's some, experimental people in the hot dog labs trying to innovate, but there's definitely been some misses.
I mean, you do have a really, and you say this even in that introduction, that like hot dogs are the kind of American where you know something's deeply wrong, but it's still somehow endearing.
Yeah, I feel like that's so many American symbols, where it's like most, American kids are just told that hot dogs are American from the time they're little, and you kind of don't question it because they're associated with all these really, nationalistic events and gatherings. And you're like, wait, why this? Of all things, it's delicious. It rocks. But like, why?
Well, and I think it is such an interesting framing, too, because, I mean, most American institutions, you don't have to dig that deep before you're like, oh, this is super fucked, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. What really kind of surprised me and what I really couldn't have planned for was the moment that we were traveling, which was the summer of 2021, which happened to be kind of, I mean, it was certainly my first time being out of the house in any meaningful way.
Well, yeah, it's what most people called hot vax summer, but y'all called hot dog summer.
Hot. Two things can be true. But yeah, I mean, like I had you know, recently gotten my vaccine, and it was, you know, you're traveling the country and everyone is doing like, it feels like, you know, aliens doing impressions of human life, but oof, not quite, yeah. Like, I felt like I was in middle school, just like relearning how to socialize. Mm-hmm. But it was also a really huge period of time for labor. And that this was kind of the summer, and this extended, but this was the summer where you started to hear no one wants to come to work anymore. And yeah. You would hear that a lot at jobs like working at a hot dog stand, where the wages are so low that often being on unemployment or, you know, using the right. few social safety nets we have left is actually better than returning to a low paid job where you're, you know, you have no, you're not being paid a living wage. And so it was really interesting to be traveling at that specific time and talk to small business owners and talk to workers. And it all kind of led up to, I was writing the book during the Great Resignation. So it was an interesting year to be writing about hot dog labor.
Hot dog labor. So notoriously, of course, there's a lot of mystery around what goes into a hot dog. It's kind of the idea that, like, it's better that you don't know. I feel like we should yes. talk about it at least a little bit, though. I mean, you go into great detail in this book describing a video of, like, a factory making it. It involves a lot of, like, meat liquids, which I found very unpleasant to hear about.
Even if you're setting aside the human and animal rights yeah. violations, which you yes. shouldn't, but just even right. looking aesthetically, it is so goopy and disgusting. And like that, showing people that video, because I've been watching that video obsessively for well over a decade, because it's... Did you watch? I mean, it's like...
No,
you see,
no. Ugh. Your description was enough, Jamie.
Thank you so much. That means the world. But yeah, in the video, it's presented very matter-of-factly with this like Seinfeld-y bass music going on in the background. And you're like, this is horrific.
Another machine then purees the meat batter into a fine emulsion and vacuums out any air.
It's like these vats of goo, and then it goes to another yeah. vat of goo, and it gets pink at one point, and you're like, how did that happen?
It pumps the meat puree into these casings, twisting it every 5 1/4 inches, the length of one hot dog.
It's very difficult to watch. And that, you know, and that presentation on TV is kind of the most sanitary possible look you get at that process. Because I feel like it is somewhat common knowledge, or I was forced to learn it in high school, was, you know, we read The Jungle by Upton Sinclair right. and knew that kind of the legacy of that book, even though it's like a book about someone becoming radicalized and becoming a socialist, which mm-hmm. is awesome. But the only like, or the significant takeaway was that there were meatpacking laws that were changed and animal rights right. laws.
Things are different than they were then, is the idea that we've been told, for sure.
Yeah, which is true. Like that book did have a huge impact and prompted several laws that are still in place today. But things have barely improved. And since then, there really hasn't been a lot of meaningful legislation in the last yeah. century to protect workers. And I did a lot of research about how meatpacking unions have really diminished in strength over the last century, and sort of led up to this pretty horrifying inflection moment when lockdown began, and there was an executive order from Trump saying that we will not shut down the meat factories, Americans need their meat, blah, blah, blah. And the Trump administration, it was revealed later in 2021, essentially colluded with two major meatpacking companies to intentionally not protect their employees so that they could produce meat as quickly as possible. So it's so frustrating to know that like there was a big impact for this industry 100 years ago, over 100 years ago, and kind yeah. of nothing has been done as the working conditions have gotten worse as well.
So yeah, in addition to those elements, you also look systemically at the fact that, you know, hot dogs are super affordable. They're often marketed to poor people. They're put into neighborhoods, you know, that don't necessarily have grocery stores. Mm-hmm. you're confronting a lot of really serious issues that for sure aren't like hot dog specific, but that do kind of make this like the entry point into this conversation. But I do wonder, you know, I mean, how this book is also about you eating 4 hot dogs a day and really enjoying a lot of them. Like how, I think this is another question about like how all of us navigate American capitalism, right? But like, how do you still manage to enjoy those things while also being so aware of how shitty the whole thing really is?
I mean, I don't have a satisfying answer.
You can't fix it for us?
I'm trying to be honest with myself about it too, because I still eat hot dogs, and I eat hot dogs more mindfully and more ethically. Unfortunately, there's no completely ethical way to eat a hot dog unless you're eating, you know, a locally sourced vegan dog that you can sort of ensure, which is possible, but difficult. And I still eat the things. There are certain companies I will no longer purchase from. Mm. But in terms, I don't know. I mean, I honestly thought when I finished this book, by the time I would be talking to you, that I would be full, not just like full vegan, but like absolutely sick of hot dogs. And that just has not been the case. And I'm, you know, trying to be, you know, gentle with myself about it, but I'm like, what is that? Like, why is it such an addictive thing? That was the food I grew up with. That's the food, mostly the food I've stuck to as an adult. And how do you break that pattern?
Yeah.
It's really something I'm frustrated with myself about.
Well, I think it probably is one of those things too, where it's sort of like, the system is designed for us to be frustrated with ourselves about it, but also not be able to do anything about it really either.
It's true. If I stopped eating hot dogs, so many of the world's problems would cease.
I have to say, I was particularly excited to learn you were writing a book about hot dogs because in college, my summer job was working at a hot dog store.
No way. Wait, where?
Yeah, it has since closed. It was in Northfield, Minnesota, which is where I went to school. And it was called Tiny's Dogs All Day, and they sold hot dogs and cigarettes. And it was delightful. It was so much fun.
That is so hot dog coded. Hot dogs and cigarettes.
Right? Wow. It was funny, though, because you talk about how like hot dog stands typically have owners or people who work there who are both charming and grumpy. And it was like, yep, that's it. That's exactly what it is.
I really love the general disposition of hot dog stand owners. There's like a few flavors of them, but there are some consistencies and like, or just like finding like what the regional hot dog owner vibe is. There's this, I wrote about it in the book, but I feel like I haven't been talking about it enough. When I went to upstate New York, their whole thing is like little hot dogs. And they're like, it's not weenies, they're little hot dogs. And you're like, all right, they're little hot dogs.
Okay.
It's so bizarre that they're little because the idea is to eat a lot of them. So what are we doing? But it is really interesting. And it's mostly owned by Greek families. And there was this thing in upstate New York called the hairy arm, which is so unsanitary. It is not legal to do anymore. But they used to say like a serving of tiny hot dogs is the length of the business owner's forearm. So he would like on his bare hairy arm would like line up 7 hot dogs and slide them onto your plate. And you'd be like, thanks, Gus. And then you would have to eat them. So that's a very pro hot dog story.
Oh, my God. So what do you think you learned that you were like the most surprised to come across on the course of this very strange journey you went on 2 years ago now?
Oh, man. That's a good question. I learned so much writing this book and researching it, and I'm so grateful I got to do it. I learned a lot about American labor history that I feel very lucky to know. I think that like a lot of people in like the late 2010s into early 2020s, I knew what I believed in, and I knew what my values were, but I didn't know a lot about the history of unionizing and a lot of labor movements. And so that was really, really cool. And then also, it was just fun to learn that a lot of people have sex on the Wienermobile. You're like, well, that's great too. That's so those probably are my top two things I learned.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. This was really a treat.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. That's it for this week. Thank you, as always, for listening. I can't believe it, but it is already June. That means we have an author interview coming up for Nerdette Book Club this coming Tuesday. So keep an ear out for that. I can't wait for you to hear it. Our book in June is The Adventures of Amina al-Sarafi. It is a just delightful pirate novel. This is something that you probably need in your life this summer. So make it happen right now and listen and read along with us as always. Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bauman. JP Swenson builds our newsletter and our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. We will see you next week.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.